Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also called Q. H, you know what that is?
I mean, other than my favorite song, you shouldn't have. You remembered.
Yes, notable Sound of Play host Ryan Heyman's favorite song. Not from a video game, surprisingly enough.
Now, video game music is overrated. Don't tell Leon I said that because I'm going to lose my Sound of Play gig. But really, come on, let's get past it.
I mean, that's why we're on the network in our little corner here at Playwright. We can be honest about these things, right?
That's right. We can say all the things that they can only say about us in the Patreon monthly shows.
That's right. We're not behind a paywall. We speak our mind to the people direct. No, I'm singing this song, H, because we have a news bulletin, our first ever, well, maybe not first ever, but one of our first, maybe second or third ever, follow-up correspondence, H.
All right, well, let's hear it. What do they have to say, good or bad?
I think it's good. So, listener Mike Esquera, I think is how you say that. I apologize if I mangle that, Mike. Mike said he was writing to follow up on the pitch for Snap Judgment. Mike writes, "Hopefully you remember Snap Judgment, the game where players connect in some form of group chat, then compete to eliminate each other by taking photos of other players without being noticed by them or local security," in parentheses, which is good.
That was a fun one.
It was definitely your pitch, I believe.
No, that was a community pitch.
Oh, it was a community pitch.
That one was last in Playwright 102, Snap Judgment.
Okay, so I definitely should remember it. It was literally like 5 episodes ago. Oh, it says here, "I actually had a chance to try this concept out this summer because I'm an English teacher for a group of international high school students who have come to live on the local university campus here for a month." That's really cool. That's me editorializing. He didn't say that. That's really cool of himself.
Parentheses, I'm really cool.
I'm really, really cool. Mike writes, "I divided my class into pairs and formed a group with everyone on Facebook to play the game. I made some new rules to adapt the game to the university campus we were playing on. I decided a, quote, spawn point where everyone started and had pairs leave in different locations. A few minutes later, I texted a list of buildings on the campus that the students had to race to share selfies of themselves in front of to the group. The winner of the game would be the team who posted photos from all the buildings first. As a side note, this was my justification for doing this as a class activity, as the students would have to practice English by reading the maps posted on the campus or asking passerbys for directions. Good job, Mike."
Interesting.
"Along the way, they could eliminate each other by sharing photos of them to the group, but in this playthrough, teams that were eliminated just returned to the spawn point and for a short delay before continuing the race. As teacher, I stayed at the spawn point, judged the incoming photos, and messaged the players to come back to respawn if they had clearly been caught in others' photos. The game worked really well. Some students were so focused on the scavenger hunt race aspect of the game that they were caught completely by surprise when their photos came up in the chat. Others chose to ignore the building objectives and simply hunt for others. It was a really good time and added a bit of excitement to a week of projects and presentations. I'm not sure how many of the games pitched on your show reached the playtesting stage, but I just wanted to let you guys know that this one actually got a trial playthrough and a pretty good reception. Thanks for all you do, Mike."
That's fantastic. I love that. I love that he kind of took it in a little bit of a different direction as well, which is like the Playwright spirit, you know? Like, we were pretty much focused on the like combat element, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Of taking pictures of other people, and kind of our like moment to moment engagement was, do this while you're spending a day at Disneyland or when you have something else to be a you know, consuming most of your attention. This is a side activity. Whereas he gave like a goal that they were supposed to be achieving using all the same tools and everything. So really, like, that feels like a much more holistic reading of the idea that, like, I think this ties together really nicely. I'm super into this.
I love that this was a community pitch, and I think you pitch these type of games better than I do on the show. But, like, you know, it's just occurring to me now, hearing Mike write about this, that, like, when we're pitching games that are about just people having phones and getting out there and being in group settings or something, it's really the most accessible type of pitches that we do on the show. So yeah, really cool. And we love it. Keep going, keep teaching your English and making players eliminate each other, Mike. This is great.
That's right. Putting the right back in playwright.
True writers.
Anyways, let's get to the video game pitches for today. Q, you are going first.
My pitch this week is a little avant-garde. I would like to pitch to you a game where you are seeing maybe a photo or potentially a painting, or even visiting a structure that has been decayed over time. So maybe it's a collapsed building, a castle, a vehicle, something like that. But it's been kind of reclaimed by nature and the landscape has changed. Then the game phase of it is actually going into a mode where you're playing as the elements and you get to expose this brand new version of the building or object to different types of elements for maybe different periods of time, and you're trying to accurately weather the thing to meet the original picture.
Oh, interesting. All right, I'm going to start the clock there and immediately begin with the clarifying questions.
Yes.
All right, so do I understand correctly that this is there's pieces of art or architecture that have been kind of lost to time, and it's up to you, using only very light touch methods, things that elemental controls, lightning strikes and wind and other types of degradation, to try to like reshape it into what it once was?
Oh, sorry, no, it's the opposite. So once you get a good look at the thing, it kind of rewinds time back to the very beginning and when the thing was new. Although I like your potential pitch there, right? The counter pitch. You get the thing in kind of pristine condition. It almost, maybe imagine like a universe simulator type set of sliders of rain, wind, you know, acid rain. How acidic is the thing? And what direction is the wind and growth coming from? What the wildlife looks like? And try to age the building appropriately into how it looked originally.
This is fun. I think the aspect of it that I would want to tweak is that destruction in and of itself is so fun. And just like destroying the game Dangerous Golfing, I think it is.
Yeah.
Made by the Dangerous Driving developers.
Well, I've got a Dangerous Golf like pitch coming next week, so don't.
All right. Great, great. Is a game where you play a golf ball basically bouncing around these kind of really upscale, whether it's a fancy formal dining room or a art museum or something like that. And just it's so gratifying being able to destroy all of these pieces of art and everything like that. I mean, I love art. I wouldn't do that in real life, but like in a virtual setting, it's very fun to just kind of like total piss take. But destruction, I think, is like so fun that like having these really abstract controls and having like a really kind of removed and pulled back sense of this is interesting. But like, I wonder if it would be more fun to cause the damage myself. Like if we could like spin this into like a crime scene investigation type thing where we come across like a car that's been like totally ruined and it's up to us to try to like determine the sequence of events by like seeing what's at the scene and trying to like break the car in similar ways by, I don't know, using tree branches to poke a hole through the window or determining where, you know, another car had hit it from the back or whatever. And I don't know, It maybe it's different enough to be a different pitch on a different day, but I love the destruction and it makes me want to get in there and feel it.
Yeah, that's a great twist to it because, like, in my head, the initial pitch is almost like Universe Sandbox, very chill, like Sunday morning cup of tea and playing around with sliders and seeing, like, oh, mm-hmm. if I rain on this thing for 6 months straight, and, you know, that sort of thing, like, does it sort of wear in this way that nature actually weared it and, like, or wore it down, rather? And I thought it would be interesting to, like, come to an understanding of what mix of elements it took to decay a piece.
Well, as an educational tool, that sounds like a really cool idea as well. Like, maybe not for a full session of sitting down in front of your Xbox and playing something, but like something that I would see as an interactive software in like a science museum where it's like, you know, the Statue of Liberty is green, but it wasn't always green. Why is it green? Play around with the different elements and see what caused it to turn green, you know?
That's cool, right? You'd have to expose it to some light and some, you know, some moisture. So I think if we take this in a new direction, what about this? Now we've got on our hands potentially a VR game where you see, like, it's almost Katamari-like, where you're seeing places that are a mess. Time goes and rewinds, and that's the beginning of the level, and your job is to mess up the room in the exact way that you saw it. And
so it's a memory test.
It's a little bit of a memory test, and you're like, no, that book, like, you could have that so, like, you go, I don't even know how object X got up there, mm-hmm. because you have just like the ability to pick up things and throw them. And maybe some are really delicate balancing acts and some are, you know, you really have to be able to throw and land something with some level of accuracy.
Or if you just had like a baseball bat. And so obviously you can use it to like hit things. But if you wanted to move things, you would have to like balance it and, you know. I like that kind of like awkwardness in VR as well.
Yeah. And then you could do something where like maybe you get just a set amount of time or something per round. So you can have like a single session in VR. And then at the end of it, the actual crime scene goes into like Batman crime vision mode. And you see just how like off all of your objects were from the original. And you're like, oh, man, I thought that book was here, but it was actually like a foot to the left. You can even score.
Yeah,
like that.
I like those types of memory games where you have to think like, you know, what changed between these two pictures? But I feel like giving myself like a bat and asking myself to destroy everything I remember being destroyed in the original would like add that extra level of kinetic fun to it that quite honestly those memory games don't have.
Yeah, and maybe there's even a set of tools you could toggle between, right? So you get like a little mini blowtorch and you get a, you know, and you get just like a bucket of water and you're like, okay, that I remember this like rug was soaked and this thing had paint on it and this thing over here was just like burnt to a crisp. And you know, you can be rewarded in different ways for remembering it correctly. Maybe there's even ways to, throughout your session, take like spend an energy point or whatever, spend some currency to like quickly gaze into the future, but just in like a defined window that you pick. You're like, okay, I'll draw this window in space. And then it literally becomes a window to the future that you can peek into for a couple seconds or something.
I would love if this wasn't necessarily a test of precision and accuracy, which ultimately it is, but if there were chaotic elements that could quickly get out of control, like if you set a fire, you have to worry about that fire spreading.
Right.
And so you have to extinguish it once it's no, kind of like a like Splatoon or something, like you're not trying to evenly coat the ground, like you're trying to just like get as close as possible to your ideal condition.
One of the things you could do with that, so that's cool to me, right? You want like, you don't want the whole place burned down. You want a controlled burn. Just like half of this desk was scorched or something like that. I even like the idea. We talked about a baseball bat. We talked about some blowtorch. Now, what if per level or per environment, all the tools to accomplish the destruction are also in the room? So you're just kind of like encouraged to pick up and play with everything and be like, oh, they probably used I thought this was a bottle of water, but it might be like vinegar or acid or something. Mm. And like, that's how you burn the hole through the floor.
Oh, yeah, clever. Things can be somewhat hidden, you know, like maybe there are some things like a gun that would be pretty obvious. You find it like hidden behind something, but maybe some things like maybe like one of the later levels could be like a secret agent's apartment. And so everything like the gun is hidden inside of a book and the flamethrower is actually a briefcase that folds out into a flamethrower, you know, that kind of like secret agent-y type thing.
And you get to have like a whole puzzle box level. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think in that sort of realm too, you could do stuff where like, it's sort of not lead people down the wrong path, but surprise them of like, oh, I actually want the gun because I need the bullets from the gun. Because I can get like gunpowder out of that. I know that's very sort of fine grain controlled, but like I can potentially burn a bullet and I know that'll cause some level of explosion. Or if I take a bunch of forks and I put them in the microwave over here, I can start an electrical fire or something. Give yourself that sort of space of like, okay, this is a weapon of destruction in some way, but maybe I have to use it in an unexpected way. I need to take the sledgehammer and use it to sort of balance an object on top of another object in order to actually get the destruction like close to what I remember. And, you know, you can be pretty forgiving with the scoring. We don't have to make someone, oh, you didn't have a perfect photographic memory. You're out of luck.
Very interesting. Well, let's close that down and let's come up with a name for this, this game of almost conflicting elements, which is fantastic.
It's definitely not a weather simulator anymore, is it really? I mean, I think you'll probably get the most keyword juice out of something like crime scene simulator or something like that. You could call it like home wrecker.
Yeah, I feel like that's getting close. You can call it like broken memories or something like that.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Or shattered memories. That sounds like a video game name
shattered
already.
Is that a thing? That sounds so
that
familiar.
That sounds like, or it's Silent Hill, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
How do you like Mr. Smithereens?
Mr. Smithereens would be a fun name for the character. I actually kind of like that. It'd be a little mascot on the box.
You play as Mr. Smithereens.
Yeah. I think that sums it up well. I'm okay with that name. Let's go with Mr. Smithereens. Yeah, that was a fun pitch. That was a good one. That's a lot of life to it.
It's just so funny because if you had told me that this weather eroding simulation game I came in with was going to become Mr. Smithereens, I would have told you you're a liar.
Never underestimate the power of Playwright.
Never.
All right, my game for today, it could be played on anything with a screen and gyro, so like Nintendo Switch, Wii U, iPad, that kind of thing. Basically, you start off in kind of a virtual space where you are playing a balancing game, essentially. Kind of like those games that you would get on 3DS or Wii U where you were trying to like stack items on top of each other and see how high you can go for falling over. And so essentially, you are trying to stack objects in a space and see how many you can stack, but the challenge isn't completed at that point. You have to, at that point, pick up the console or the iPad or whatever you're using and actually balance the objects around. It kind of shifts into an overhead view. And I don't know what keeps people honest from like just setting it on a table and, you know, then you have kind of perfect steadiness, but we'd have to include some kind of like maybe a walking task. Maybe they have to cover a certain amount of space. Maybe they have to, maybe there's like wind blowing in the game and you have to like kind of counterbalance against that. But anyways, I want something that starts as a balancing game and moves into something that feels like you're actually trying to balance it in real life. So I'm going to start the clock there.
A balancing game that mutates into a better balancing game. It's actually really interesting because I immediately went to, when you start thinking of that mechanic of the wind blowing or whatever, I was like, oh, you could kind of do the Tony Hawk grinding sort of mechanic where like you just have to constantly be balancing it and it's trying to tip itself slightly left and right the whole time. So like if you did set it still, that's where you're going to for sure lose. And for whatever reason, like aesthetically, I started going into the mind of being like a waiter, where you're like stacking glasses and plates, and then you almost have to take the iPad and hold it up with like your hand in that sort of waiter with the giant tray pose and walk around your
house.
You
can't see what's on the screen at that point, which is kind of like your primary source of feedback.
I guess you'd have to hold it like in front of you, like it with two hands. That will be your best balance. And then even if you did it with a phone or an iPad, holding it with two hands like that, you could activate like either the top or bottom facing camera, either run footage or like see how far the person traveled.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you could just like feed the camera feed in through the screen. And so it looks like there's just the ground beneath you and you are actually carrying something little bit of extra fun.
What's kind of fun about the waiter or waitress conceit is that like maybe you have to do it multiple times where you're like, your house or something is the restaurant and you have to go to different tables and they're going to have different configurations of cups and plates and silverware that you're all trying to, you know, some plates with still a bunch of food on it. So it like knocks the balance off of everything you stack on top of that.
Okay.
You know, maybe it's like how many tables can you service at a time with all the balancing you have to do before you bring it to the kitchen.
You know, I forgot to introduce an element of this in my pitch. When I was kind of originally conceptualizing it, I thought of it as kind of like a horse type game. Like you would challenge somebody else to match your, not necessarily like the exact setup that you had, but like you would choose certain objects from the environment, you would stack them and you would balance them for however long. And so essentially when you challenged your friend, it would be marked the objects that they have to stack. They have to find some way of stacking them. If they find a better way to stack them, it'll be all the more easier for them. And then they have to balance it for as long as you did to beat you.
I think that's cool. So you start as like a virtual, for whatever reason, another thing that comes to my mind is like, this is a new crazy like AR way to play Jenga. But like once the Jenga tower is made, it like you have to move the Jenga tower to some other place, which is like I shouldn't say this, but I think most of us have played a game of Jenga at some point where you, let's face it, you were the jerk and you pulled out a brick that you knew was just going to make the thing not structurally sound. I think you could do something like that where, yeah, if you can get it taller or something and you rate on height at the beginning and then you rate on balance at the end. And so you're trying to achieve height. And of course, that makes the second task all the more difficult.
Okay, so it could just be like a matter of like blocks that you're stacking. Yeah, I think that does kind of simplify things a bit. Yeah, mechanically, I'm not sure, again, like how we
track
make
distance.
Sure to like, yeah, tracking distance is a little bit tricky. Because I don't even know how phone games, do they use the GPS? Do they use like some, I guess they have the pedometer, is that what it's called? Where they measure steps?
That's true. You could make someone go up and down stairs and then how nefarious.
It's just the only thing that I don't want is for somebody to just put it on a table where it's just not going to be disturbed.
Right, that's true. But if we do something where it is kind of always on the wobble and you have to do that, then like the first is height and then the second is, okay, now how long can you maintain it, right?
And okay, yeah,
and maybe, you know, you can give extra points for like, I can tell somebody, you give like a stair bonus, the person went up and down stairs while still balancing it. I think a phone could probably track steps, although I wonder, it depends on how phones track steps. If they track your like walk gait while it's in your pocket, then that wouldn't work. But if they track just like actual like vibration and movement and distance, then I think you'd be covered.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's coming together where you can, where it always has the propensity to fall down. You know, almost you can conceptualize it like a tray with a bunch of like little rolling marbles on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
But I do like the idea of stacking as well. Like, I think there's something kind of cool to that. So I don't want to just, you know, I don't want to lose that.
One thing that it could potentially do, if this isn't creepy, you could bring the device, if it had access to a microphone. Noises and stuff were also prone to like knocking it over or blowing it in a certain direction or something. Then you could have like bonuses for somebody, encouraging them to be around like some noise, right? That's going to make it more difficult to balance. And like the person maintained a balance for X amount of time at X decibels.
I don't know. Like, would that make it more difficult to balance? Like if you're on a bus, obviously that would make it difficult. But like if you just have some like heavy metal going on your computer, I don't really see that as being that big of a contributor to you losing your balance.
No.
Unless you were compelled to headbang.
That's true. I think what I meant there was like the just noise in general, because your phone can tell like the sort of volume level that's around you makes it more difficult to balance. So like it's thrown even more out of harmony and you're doing way more micro adjustments and stuff to keep it balanced and around noise.
So I think that would have to be like a like an optional thing that you can toggle on and off, because if we want people to be doing this, you know, in their free time, that would, you know, you only have so much control over how noisy your environment is. And sometimes it's really not appropriate to be banking a lot of noise.
So what if instead of holding it, I don't know if we've still been thinking about holding it like the screen is down towards the ground, but I think you could do with
screen down towards the ground.
Oh, sorry, not screen, like camera down towards the ground, or looking at it like flat down. If you make it so that I can see the screen the whole time, it's my phone, I can always see it. And we're using the gyroscope, so we even still know about forward and back tilt. So I have to keep my phone relatively straight. Mm-hmm. We turn on the camera in the background, and then, you know, you almost create a little bit of a social competition of like, this person went on a run with this thing. This person walked their dog with this thing, and you're seeing the thing have to be balanced like, you know, true Tony Hawk grinding on a rail style, but they're doing it and it's like life happening in the background. So you almost get the like the coolness of the AR of like a Pokemon Go, but you don't fully take someone out of their environment. So if they're crossing the street, hopefully they still can see if a car is coming.
They got hit by a car and it's still balancing.
Damn, that's a pro move.
I think the ultimate way to play this game would be to use like HoloLens or something, where you can actually have like this, like a virtual reality tower.
Oh yeah,
but you know that's future tech at this point.
Poor HoloLens, still future tech.
Let's go ahead and close that one down. I think we've gotten enough there, and let's give it a name. See, so stacking has already been taken.
What if it was like stack and stand or stack and?
That's fun. That's a nice little ring to it. Stack and stand.
Or stack and run, because you have to, like, if you are tracking movement on the phone, like, you can actually do GPS distance plus, like, run footage, and this thing will murder your battery in, like, 20 different ways.
Yeah, it's fun. I think it has the feeling of a 90s electronic game, like a Bop It or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's the stack and run. All right, cool. Let's move on to the community. This one comes from Robert Lee, who says, what about a murder mystery detective game where you have to utilize the greatest modern crime-fighting tool available, the Creepy True Crime Podcast? Starting the clock there. So I think the easy way to take this, and I'm not opting out of this because this might be the best way to take it, would be to put yourself in a virtual space, or even a real space, if you want to go kind of like AR with it, and have a podcast pre-recorded that can describe kind of events in the area, and you have to, you know, around you, whether it's in a public space or whether you're in a virtual reality space, kind of work out the order of events. But the impossible way to do this that would be very cool would be if you were to be recording the true crime podcast. But again, that kind of like just loose, raw input of people speaking into a microphone doesn't translate well into game systems.
A murder mystery detective game where you have to utilize the greatest modern crime fighting tool available, the Creepy True Crime Podcast. What are some of the tropes at this point that we expect with these true crime podcasts? Is it like the going and visiting someone to get an interview? I feel like that's like definitely a thing. I feel like also not fabricating, but really having to couch a lot of information in a narrative. So maybe you need like a Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney sort of, not conversation, but like object placement manipulation and like building a story around something.
Yeah, you know, the the problem that I have with this, I mean, not a problem with the idea necessarily, but like the thing that I'm having having trouble in my own mind kind of overcoming is the idea that like if a true crime podcast in this world was recorded about an event in a specific spot, it just feels like, why are we investigating it? Like if the podcast is already recorded, I would infer that it's kind of an old crime and probably the case closed at this point, whether they found the person or not. And, you know, if there's enough information out there for a true crime podcast to be recorded, probably somebody else has already looked into it. But then again, I mean, they're like the season one of Serial was kind of a case that was maybe not investigated all that well, and they were going back to it and giving it kind of a second lease on life. So I don't know. How do you take this?
I would be interested in doing something where you have to, we even saw this a little bit with The Jinx on HBO, where this is probably also Fire Emblem brain creeping in, where I'm thinking about like the explore mode versus the like time to publish an episode mode, where you spend cycles or days in a calendar going out and having an avatar that like wanders around this world and like can collect evidence and information. And then you have a day where you're like structuring the show and trying to form the story. It's leading you to a path, or maybe you kind of come in with a preset path and then this is like real podcasting. You start to pick up like listeners week in and week out, and it's kind of about how long you can keep the story going and interesting before you need to move on to the next crime.
Okay. Initial reservation is that there's too many systems and too many like conflicting goals, like whether the goal is to gain the most podcast listeners or the to solve the crime, like those things don't necessarily go hand in hand. But thinking about it more, maybe there is something to this crime scene. You can go to these different scenes, you can find evidence, but there's also a lot of like red herring type evidence. And so you have to kind of have a hypothesis as to what happened, or maybe you can follow kind of like some easy clues that you can pick up. But there's a lot of clues that are potentially kind of confounding and don't fit the narrative of what happened there. And so depending on what you find, they kind of unlock nodes in a tree in a way. So as you are reconstructing the story to tell your podcast listeners, you kind of have to pick like the broken branch, follow that branch, you know, was broken by the car that sped out of control. And then you can kind of follow that. And so you are telling a story about what happened there. And then based on like how well you did, you might get more leads to follow the next day, or it could kind of like spiral into dead ends.
That's interesting. So you have to chase down leads and you have to follow different threads.
It's kind of like your podcast listeners are doing some of the work for you. Like they're kind of your legion of detectives that are out there because they're interested, you know?
Right. There's some darkness to mobilizing a fleet of your own listeners to go do your bidding, which is why I want everyone listening to sign this petition that I've put up on the internet. That's kind of cool. So you're trying to solve crimes, you're going down threads, and like, should we have a mechanic where you're taking like, you know, sorry to hit too close to home, listener write-ins, listener submissions, and you have to like figure out which ones are real and which ones are maybe malarkey, and like based on your knowledge of the evidence, you're like, ooh, I don't think this is true, or ooh, I think this person's really connected, I've heard that name before, or something like that.
That's interesting. So kind of choosing the next crime scene to visit based on suggestions from the listeners, based on like what they've found. This could be framed as like it's a small town community. Everyone kind of knows the area, but you're new. And so you're doing some investigative journalism, but your audience is familiar with the space. And if they pick up on things, then it would make sense that they have better sense of like where to go next. So you are kind of like waiting on them to get your heading.
What does the end of the game look like for you? Is it that you solve the crime? Is it that you've like, you know, I think it's a murder mystery detective game where you have to utilize the greatest crime fighting tool. But like you have those podcasts that like end and you have podcasts that don't end. So is the goal to like string out as many episodes as you can, or is it to like come to a satisfying conclusion in as few episodes as you can?
I think regardless of how many episodes it takes, like maybe there is a standard number of episodes. Well, I don't know. Maybe you can speed run this and get through it much quicker. But like, I think the most satisfying end to something like this is solving the mystery, like being able to name your assailant, or maybe declare somebody that was previously convicted as being innocent, like having some sort of closure, but maybe not telling the audience whether they got it right or wrong. Leave it for them to discuss among themselves on the internet. You know, what did you come away with this feeling?
Yeah, I do. I also love the idea of like episode through episode, like being able to check your podcast reviews to like find out if you're really on to something or if people are really enjoying what you're listening to. Because the podcast side of it, I think, is to me the thing that I would be most excited. Oh, there's like a little mini podcast simulator inside this murder mystery.
And it would just be kind of like picking lines every once in a while between kind of like voice acted segments.
Yeah, that's cool. You could even set up like moments where you are saying things on mic or making accusations that feel very sort of telltale in structure. So you can have those moments where, you know, the music kicks in and very dramatically as you're like making a statement.
Yeah, I think we got something there. That's a nice pitch overall. Let's end that and let's come up with a name.
I feel like all these crime podcasts are something like, what would you call the murder mystery podcast?
I mean, there's Serial, there's My Favorite Murder. I feel like there must be some sort of a pun on something we can do.
My Favorite Murder is such a good title.
Yeah.
Why didn't we think of that? Is there something really terrible like Murder Castery or something like that?
What does that mean?
You're like suggesting podcast. Murder Castery. It's the Murder Castery you're listening to.
What about like podcast dastrophe?
Oh, I see. Let's try and construct that. Podcastrophe? That doesn't podcastrophe. Sound like it. I think it's time for me to just momentarily take to iTunes. We've had such a hard time with naming this week.
It's a hard part of the show. And I always come up with better names while I'm editing, like yelling at myself on the computer. Come on, this is the perfect name. Why didn't you think of this? It's right there.
H, the first dang category in iTunes is true crime. Here we go. Crime Junkie Podcast. Man in the Window. Oh, that sounds so good. Culpable. Dr. Death. That's a good one. Dirty John. Cold. Hell and Gone. Medical Mysteries. Dateline, My Favorite Murder. We can call it anything that sounds like Case File. What about Cast File instead of Case File or something?
Or Closed Cast Investigations.
Closed Casket? Is that what we're doing
like,
there?
Like Closed Case Investigations.
Oh, okay. Oh, what about... Dude, Cold Cast?
Like Cold Case?
Cold Cast Investigations.
That sums it up. Cold Cast.
You can investigations or something on there if you wanted.
Yeah, sure. Anyways, that's our community pitch for the day. We got there. And that came from Robert Lee, who sent in his pitch to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can also email us playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us @playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And as always, go and check out the other great shows on the Kane and Rince podcast network, like the Kane and Rince video game review podcast, who just put up their Pilot Wing 64 episode at time of recording. which then prompted me to listen to the entirety of the Pilot Wings 64 soundtrack, which I genuinely love. Maybe I'll get to share it with you on a other Caden Wrench show, Sound of Play, one day. And, of course, the Sausage Factory, interviews with game developers. Lots of shows, lots of content. You could fill your week with CNR goodness.
All right. Well, before we close out the show, I had pulled up the Wikipedia for Silent Hill Shattered Memories because of our discussion halfway through the show. And I was surprised to find Sam Barlow's name as the lead writer and designer.
Really?
On Shattered Memories of Her Story and Telling Lies fame. And he also did a Ghostwriter game as the lead designer and Serious Sam Next Encounter. So I never would have guessed. That's pretty cool.
God, from a Silent Hill B-side to indie darling Sam Barlow.
What a guy. Very cool. We like that kind of variety here. Anyways, take us out of the show. Why don't you give us a mini pitch?
I want to do a new Paperboy, but you're delivering pizzas and you're also the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.